Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. Democratic leaders and people around the country continue to respond to Joe Biden withdrawing from the presidential campaign, with endorsements growing for Vice President Kamala Harris to be the nominee. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley takes a look at reaction to the political shakeup.
On Tuesday afternoon, the Democratic leaders of the U.S. House and Senate added their endorsements to the growing chorus. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York praised President Biden for withdrawing and said the party is overflowing with excitement, enthusiasm, and unity.
Democrats are moving forward stronger and more united than ever before. In just the last 36 hours, I have seen a surge of enthusiasm from every corner of our party, uniting behind Vice President Harris. And now begins the next chapter in our quest to make sure Donald Trump does not become president. We see very clearly how nervous the Republicans are about our new nominee. Well, they ain't seen nothing yet.
House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries represents New York's 8th District. He joined Schumer for the announcement.
Vice President Harris has earned the nomination. She is ready, she is willing, she is able to energetically and emphatically lead America into the future.
New York 21st District Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, the House Republican Conference Chair, on Tuesday continued her criticisms of the Biden administration and claimed the Democratic Party remains in free fall.
Make no mistake, the American people know that Kamala Harris owns Joe Biden's catastrophic and failed policies, from the inflation crisis to the energy crisis to the crime crisis. And Kamala Harris is Joe Biden's open border czar. By every metric, Harris has failed to secure our borders.
Gerald Malloy is challenging incumbent Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders in the general election and recently returned from the Republican National Convention. He says President Biden should now resign and doesn't consider Harris a threat to the GOP ticket.
The Republican Party is the party right now that's going to reunite America. President Trump, he is going to be the next president. He's going to do great things for our country.
Former Congressman Bill Owens, a Democrat, is Stefanik's predecessor and a commentator for WAMC. He is pleased that President Biden has stepped aside and expects an enthusiastic Democratic convention that will nominate Harris.
She seems to be in a position to move into the race authoritatively, and I think that that's a very, very good thing. I'm hopeful that the polling will show over the next week to 2 weeks that the race is now tight, hopefully within the margin of error. And if it is, I think we have an excellent chance of prevailing.
Former Vermont governor, presidential candidate, and Democratic National Committee chair Howard Dean thinks Biden could have run the country for another 4 years, but would have had trouble beating Donald Trump. He says Harris is the most capable person running for president.
Kamala will be a terrific candidate, and I think she obviously answers the age questions because she's nearly 20 years younger than the president. But I have never thought that Biden was going to be a drag on the ticket. And I do think it matters who she chooses. There's at least three people who have been talked about who are incredibly capable.
Harris held her first presidential campaign rally Tuesday in Wisconsin.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week, I sat down with New York State Department of Environmental Conservation Interim Commissioner Sean Mahar. We spoke about a number of environmental areas that the department handles, but I specifically asked him about how the DEC manages wildfires.
Yeah, most people don't think of New York as being a forest fire state, but we are. We are very susceptible to wildfires, and that's why we very much take a proactive approach to the way in which we manage forests. You know, here in the Albany area, Albany Pine Bush is a prime example of where we use prescribed fire to reduce fire risk overall. You know, a lot of these ecosystems in the state, from the Pine Barrens to the Pine Bush, they're fire dependent. Like the plant species that grow in these places need fire to actually complete their life cycle. So what we do is come in and reduce fire risk by doing prescribed burns and making that management and those management activities happen on these sites. So, you know, very much, you know, we encourage, and that's why we have an annual burn ban in the state from March 14th to May 16th. It's a prime time in the season where the snow is melting, things are drying out, you've got a lot of dead branches and leaf litter, and that's why we encourage people not to burn during those times, because that's one of the prime seasons for wildfires in New York.
How do you catch them? Now, do you have satellite imagery you can look at to zero down on people who have maybe lit fire? Fire watchers, is that still something that goes on in forests?
A lot of it is word of mouth. A lot of it is, average everyday New Yorker seeing something happen and calling our rangers or environmental conservation police officers to go investigate a case of burning.
And if you call a local police officer, will they know to call the rangers? Is that how that would work too, if you can't remember to call the rangers?
Typically, we have good relationships with the state police and local police officers around the state. Each of our rangers and ECOs are assigned to specific zones, and those zones intersect with some of those local police jurisdictions, and they develop a lot of good relationships with local fire departments, local police agencies. We've got really good connectivity, and that's really what helps our jobs overall in responding to these issues. But during the spring season, my phone is always going off with the daily fire reports that we get from, you know, a small little half acre, you know, a campfire that got out of control to something larger from a lightning strike. And, you know, we've got acres of a forest burning, but our rangers are there responding, working with the local fire departments to get the control underway, and it's really amazing to watch them work. We've got some cool videos online that Jeff and others have really put together here that tell that story.
Well, this would be the time to give them the website, how to get there, because there's so much information there, including what we were previously talking about. You know, we mentioned one of the horror stories that ended well, but, you know, even tips, maps, hiking guides, you know, what to do when you're on a hike, how to plan for it. You've got all that information on your website.
Yeah, dec.ny.gov is your gateway into all the things that DEC has to offer. And Dave, you know, we've talked a lot about different things here, but, you know, even smoky skies, right, from last year, many people don't think about the air quality meteorologists.
Oh, yeah.
Meteorologists that we have on staff at DEC who are monitoring that. We've made such tremendous progress in improving air quality in the state. And, you know, I think it was a good reminder, an unfortunate reminder last year with the wildfire smoke that we saw, because people saw these hazy skies and like, wow, you know, what's going on here? But they take for granted all the work that went underway, because that's what New York used to look like before we had emissions controls, before we did all the regulations we did. And that's really our Air Resources Division that has really pioneered and piloted a lot of that work and made that progress.
Well, you know, the thing you mentioned earlier, invasives, that's something that is a result of climate change. You know, the woolly adelgid or didymo, or, you know, all the things our Pat Bradley reports on out of the North Country. But it's true. I mean, there are no real lines or walls between states.
No.
And as the temperature changes, birds migrate, insects move, all sorts of things are happening. And of course, we carry these things with us when we travel often.
Yeah. And that's why on our website, dec.ny.gov, especially when it comes to invasive species, we give a lot of tips that folks can use to either, if you're a recreational boater, clean, drain, and dry your boats. Like, that is the simplest way to help stop the spread of invasive species from lakes to lakes when it comes to our aquatics. Washing off your boots after hiking. Like, you don't want to hike from one location and go to the next, because you may carry seeds or something that can be transported elsewhere.
That's New York State Department of Environmental Conservation Interim Commissioner Sean Mahar. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. More than a year after a historic storm washed out homes, roads, and bridges across the Hudson Valley, local officials are still searching for ways to bring financial relief to residents. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King reports.
Pauling Town Supervisor James Schmidt recalls feeling a little deja vu on the morning of July 9th, 2023. He says the town suffered a similar storm with severe flooding the year before. This time, Schmidt says an entire stretch of old Route 55 was washed out, as were smaller roads, culverts, and homes.
When some of the photos started coming through, and I could see, for instance, Merle Park, which is a park that I grew up in, was under 4 feet of water. You know, the entire park, the basketball courts, the parking lot, the lawn areas, it looked like one giant lake. And that's when I realized that there was a lot of water out there, and it came down in such a short timeline. We had impacts in every single corridor of our community for that storm.
Schmidt estimates the town suffered roughly $8 million in damages, and Pauling wasn't even the epicenter. One person was killed and homes were decimated in the Orange County village of Highland Falls, which received a deluge of roughly 8 inches of rain. New York Governor Kathy Hochul called it a 1,000-year event, and President Biden approved a federal disaster declaration to provide local governments with funds from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Similar efforts by lawmakers to get FEMA relief for private residents, however, have fallen on deaf ears. While most roads, bridges, and public buildings are back online, Congressman Pat Ryan of the 18th District says many homeowners are still picking up the pieces, and it's unlikely that FEMA relief is ever going to come through.
We have many families still under a tremendous burden of financial pressure from dealing with the cleanup who didn't have flood insurance, justifiably, because they lived in an area that really didn't normally merit it. So we're working with each of those families and local leaders to try to help relieve the pressure wherever we can.
In the weeks after the storm, Hochul unveiled a $3 million grant program to help homeowners and businesses, but some families did not meet the low-income qualifications to apply. Hochul recently announced the availability of low-interest loans for residents through the U.S. Small Business Administration. Homeowners can take out up to $500,000 to repair their primary residence. Ryan, a Democrat, recently helped force a bill onto the House floor that would provide tax relief for flood victims, including those impacted by the 2023 storms and those still struggling from Hurricane Ida in 2021. He said it's important for local residents and officials to reassess their risk for future storms, however, and plan accordingly.
Given how much and how volatile the climate is, we need to rethink which areas are really at risk, who needs flood insurance. The flood insurance situation is really a mess, and a lot of families that think they're covered often are not. So we're working with a lot of folks around that in particular. I think, unfortunately, we're going to see these once-a-century storms more and more frequently, unfortunately.
In Pauling, Republican Supervisor Schmidt agrees that intense storms are becoming more common and that preparation is key. He says the town has been looking at ways it can rebuild stronger and redirect water in the future. In a way, he says the town's flooding in 2022 helped it recover more quickly in 2023.
We had already been through the FEMA process the year prior, which made it a little bit easier for us compared to other municipalities because we had just lived this. So we've been able to get the paperwork done and answer all the deadlines and get to where we had to get.
Schmidt says some smaller roads in the town remain closed as that financial assistance continues to trickle in.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jesse King.
The planned closure of the Great Meadow Correctional Facility has left Washington County locals concerned for the future of the region. The Legislative Gazette's Aaron Schella-Levine with that story.
The maximum security prison employs 559 staff and houses 480 incarcerated individuals. The New York State Department of Corrections and Community Supervision cites a dramatic decline in prison population in its decision to shutter Great Meadow. The facility can hold nearly 1,600 prisoners, and according to docs, the state's prison population has dropped by nearly 54% since its peak in 1999. While Doc says that all Great Meadow employees will be offered jobs at other facilities in the state, Granville Supervisor Nate Baker says he'd like to see the state reconsider the decision.
I feel very sad for the employees that are over there now with all the what ifs and what next and everything else that would be running through their mind. But, you know, November 6th and you know, the following month is, you know, Christmas time, it's really a very hard pill to swallow for the community.
Great Meadow is set to shutter November 6th. The state budget signed by Governor Kathy Hochul in April allowed for the closure of up to 5 state correctional facilities and says at least 90 days notice would be given for the closures deemed necessary for cost savings and efficiency.
If anybody could look at that and say, economically, how's it going to affect our area? there isn't one person that wouldn't be able to look at that and say, it's going to be devastating.
Michael Puttorti is a co-owner of the Rail Yard Tap Room in Whitehall, just down the road from Great Meadow. He worked in the prison for 27 years and says a large portion of his business comes from catering to current employees.
It's going to affect restaurants, car dealers, you name it, home repair places. You know, there's people aren't going to be able to maintain their houses there because they don't have jobs. They're going to move or whatever's going to happen. So it's a whole trickle-down effect for every aspect of it. I'd say for us, yeah, it's going to hurt us quite a bit. Between lunches and families coming in at night, it's going to be tough.
Puttorti says Washington County and other upstate communities have been overlooked by Albany.
They really don't really care too much about us up here. We're a small factor. I understand population-wise, we're a small factor into it, but we're still all people that live up here, and I think no consideration was taken to effect at all.
Whitehall Chamber of Commerce President Cheryl Puttorti says local leaders need to meet in the coming weeks and that the outlook is bleak.
Obviously, Whitehall is a very small community, and we don't have industry here to help support them or offer other jobs. So if they do have to leave the area, it's going to create empty homes. It's going to affect all of our local businesses that rely on these people who come in and out of their doors every day.
Shannon Sharp owns the Fort Ann Superstop. She says as much as 20% of her business comes from employees of Great Meadow. They altered their weekend hours to open early on Sundays to accommodate prison staff and even bought a food truck in part to bring it over to the facility throughout the year. For Sharp, the closure means more than just a loss of business.
These guys are coaches to the school here. They're PTO members. They're volunteers at the school. They're volunteers at the, EMS, the fire squad, the fire department. They do that on top of their hard work, and that's another area that's going to be really hurt, you know. These guys truly care about their community and providing for their families. Some of them are few generations of going through that jail, and they've built their roots here.
Sharp plans to host a rally in support of local businesses and Great Meadow employees the first weekend in August. New York State Correctional Officers and Police Benevolent Association Union President Chris Summers denounced the closures, saying the redistribution of staff throughout the state will not solve statewide staffing issues. NYSCOBA represents 475 corrections officers and 33 sergeants at Great Meadow. Also set to close is the Sullivan Correctional Facility in Fallsburg. Reporting for the Southern Adirondack Bureau on the campus of Skidmore College, this is Aaron Shello Levine.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The race for an open New York State Senate seat is rekindling an old rivalry. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
In office since 1997, Democrat Neil Breslin is the longest tenured senator in the chamber. The 82-year-old from the 46th District decided not to seek another term early this year. Party leaders were quick to promote State Assemblymember Pat Fahey of the 109th District to run in Breslin's stead this fall, and any other Democrats who had interest in running for Breslin's seat quickly dropped off the radar. In February, Family Dance Heating and Air Conditioning founder Ted Dance launched a Republican candidacy for the seat, setting up a rematch of sorts against Fahey, whom he had run against in 2012 for the assembly seat. Fahey handily defeated Dans, netting about 63% of the vote.
Oh, she slaughtered me. She killed me. It was all Albany. Of course, everybody knows that grew up in this area like myself. Democrats run the roost. Well, I don't consider myself just as a Republican. I'm sponsored by the Republican. I'm a Republican. I'm a conservative. I'm independent. But I'm a New Yorker, and I want what's best for New York first.
According to the Assembly website, the 66-year-old Fahey has been the prime sponsor of over 200 bills, more than 75 of which have been signed into law. Dans, who just turned 77, doesn't think much of one of Fahey's best-known causes, reimagining Interstate 787 to reconnect Albany with its waterfront.
A little late. Hindsight's always 20/20. That should have been a consideration a long time ago. As it stands, that's as in my own opinion, that's a unfeasible project.
Dan says he balks at projects fueled by tax dollars, like the recently announced $10 million in state funding to dismantle Central Warehouse, long an eyesore on the Albany skyline.
And then what? We're going to fund a new project there? You know, more tax incentives? I want to see property go back on the tax roll. And, you know, it seems amazing to me that it's going to cost $12 or $13 million to tear a building down. I have really got a problem figuring how it's going to cost that much to do that. I always flinch when I hear the word state money. That's our tax dollars.
Dan says he'd also like to see the sprawling College of St. Rose campus back on the tax roll after the private college in Albany shuttered. At the close of the session, lawmakers, led by Fahey, approved the Albany County Pine Hills Land Authority to handle the property's future.
It was last November on Channel 10, my opponent stated that the College of St. Rose was financially secure. 2 months after that, they announced their closing. She's a head of the committee for higher education. You're telling me somebody didn't know something was going on there for the last 5 or 6 years? They ran out of money? I would love to see what happened there. So I don't want it to happen again. If we have another college move in there or another state entity move in there, we have to be real careful with our money. People are leaving New York because it's so expensive to live here. And I don't mean to jump track on that, but that's part of it. We just keep spending money. Now we're coming to an election, and the politicians are running out there giving money away left and right.
Dan's reflecting on taxpayers footing a $1.7 billion Wadsworth Labs project, thinks some of the campus's 81 buildings and part of the St. Rose property could be a new home for the facility. He has misgivings about good cause eviction.
I think as a state and as a county community, we have an obligation to help people that are struggling. But to just openly say that we're not going to give the landlord the right to evict somebody, I think that's wrong.
Dan says the city of Albany is not safe. He says he and his wife had a frightening encounter with a young unhoused individual as they left an event at the Palace Theater that ended when two burly security guards from a nearby building walked into the scene.
My wife was in tears. As it stands, my wife will never go into the city of Albany again after dark.
Dan's blames Fahey.
This no bail has been a disaster. This is one of Pat Fahey's pet projects. It's an absolute failure. You know, what we need to do is we need to boost up the police force. We need to increase the pay for the police. There shouldn't be an officer on the beat that's carrying a gun that's making less than $100,000 a year.
Another of Fahey's priorities, the New York Heat Act, didn't make it through the legislature this year. Dan says that's a good thing because the infrastructure needed to supply new electricity just isn't there. He adds most people prefer clean-burning natural gas for cooking and heating.
How do we generate electricity? We're burning oil down at the National Grid plant down in Selkirk. We're burning oil. We're burning gas. In some areas, coal. I just don't see it as a feasible object that we could say within 5 years we're going to be all electric. The idea that we can just stop the flow of gas and switch everything over to electric is going to be very expensive.
When it comes to climate change and protecting the environment, Dan says we should do things right and be clean, but also be wise.
I think we have an obligation on the federal end to significantly put pressure on third world countries, and not even third world countries. You look at China, they're building like putting a dozen new coal plants online every month. Why is it we have these great meetings, and we don't pressure other countries to do what we do. It just doesn't make sense to me that if we're just that little island on Earth and we're keeping it clean, but everybody else's filth and pollution and dirt is blowing onto our dirt, it's got to be a global effort, not just us.
Although it may seem the odds are once again against him due to Democrats' enrollment advantage, Danz believes there is an opportunity for victory.
The idea that I would run against Pat Fahey again really wasn't a consideration. Ms. Fahey now has a voting record that I can go against. Previous to that, I think it was a very one-way race, given that there were so many more registered Democrats than there were independents, Republicans, or conservatives. That was overwhelming. I felt it was a real good experience, and I enjoyed the challenge, and I'm a real competitive person, and I think this time around the tide has turned. I think there's a lot of people out there who claim they're Democrats but are actually going to vote independently. They're going to vote for the best candidate.
Fahey says she feels good about the rematch against Danz.
I think people appreciate it that even if they don't always agree with me, they know I'm going to work my heart out, and I feel I'm getting good feedback on that. So I feel optimistic in this Senate campaign.
The 46th State Senate District includes portions of Albany and Schenectady counties and all of Montgomery County.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen to the Legislative Gazette anytime at WAMCpodcast.org. Look for program number 2430 and join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York state government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustino. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.